Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Millions of people have fled Central America in recent years to seek asylum in the U.S. Gang violence, poverty, and even climate change drive people to leave the only homes they've ever known to seek an uncertain, better life in another country. Many of these asylum seekers who have managed to gain entry to the U.S. say that gun-related threats and violence have left them with PTSD. A study from the University of Michigan examined the firearm-related threats these immigrants faced in their home countries and the role U.S.-manufactured firearms played in that violence. Today, we're talking with Eugenio Weigand Vargas, lead author of the study and postdoctoral research fellow at the Institute for Firearm Injury Prevention at the University of Michigan. The study was co-authored by Jason Goldstick at the University of Michigan and Laura Vargas at the University of Colorado. Eugenio Weigand Vargas explains how and why the study originated.
I've been focusing a lot on the discrepancies of how firearm violence affects Hispanics within the United States, but also how U.S. firearms traffic abroad, particularly Central America, Caribbean region, how U.S. firearms affects public health there and violence overall. We had done previous studies examining how the production and importation of firearms in the United States was associated with the rise of firearm homicides in the Caribbean and Central American region, finding a strong association, particularly after the mid-2000s, when U.S. production of firearms and imports increased. You also saw an increase in firearm homicides in the region of Central America and the Caribbean. And that is because there are various channels by which firearms can be trafficked to these countries, including, you know, sales with no background checks, including straw purchasing. So we wanted to see a little bit closer the impact that it had, and particularly on other issues of the region, but that could be associated with them. So, for example, we had done a study looking at how firearms impacted outcomes in extortions in Mexico. We also reviewed how firearm mortality in Mexico had changed in the last 8 years. What are some of the dynamics on that change? And one of the questions that really caught me and Laura's attention, Laura from the University of Colorado, was how does firearms affect migration, or how do migrants impacted by firearms slowing there? And we had heard numerous Congress introducing legislation that mentioned that, you know, U.S. firearms are fueling violence and that they're contributing to migration to the United States. But we hadn't seen a study or report that mentioned, okay, how many or what's the proportion of immigrants that report that they have been threatened with a firearm? And what are some of the factors associated with that and potentially some of the implications that that has? And Laura had put together a really nice data set, a survey. She had conducted surveys in the border, particularly in McAllen, Texas, from 2022 to 2023, where she included numerous questions to immigrants that were coming into the United States from Latin America or the Caribbean. And many of those questions included instances of violence, were you threatened with a firearm, where it's the country of origin, social demographics. So included a bunch of questions that we were able to use in this study. And happy to talk a little bit more about what we saw and what are some of the results that we saw.
Well, sure. Let's go back in time, though. We're hearing about this, you know, mass migrations from Central America, countries in South America, and a lot of them claim that they are, when they're filing for asylum, they are saying that they are victims of violence or being threatened with violence, and that goes back to the purpose of your study. But I think it'd be really interesting to hear about how the United States is actually responsible for a lot of this violence, as you hinted at earlier. Why is it that so many weapons from the U.S. end up in Mexico, end up in Central America?
There's some various factors that have contributed to that. One is the United States used to ban assault weapons. So from 1994 to 2004, the United States banned assault weapons. But in 2004, it no longer prohibited the commercialization of assault weapons such as AR-15 and AK-47s. So the federal ban was removed in 2004. And after that period, you did see an increase in firearm production in the U.S., particularly of rifles and high-caliber pistols. And again, these are the weapons of choice for many criminal groups in Mexico and Central America. So you had that increase in firearm production in the United States during the mid-2000s. But at the same time, you have various channels by which it's very easy for anybody to acquire a firearm 3 miles from the border and simply cross it over into Mexico. I don't know if people know, but while gun shops or federal firearm license dealers are required to run a background check when somebody is purchasing a firearm, that's not a requirement during private sales in many of the states, including Arizona and Texas, for example, which are border states. So anybody can go to a gun show or purchase a firearm online with no questions asked. They can purchase 3, 4, 5 AR-15s, AK-47s at a gun show and simply drive them across the border. The other channel, which is also common, is the straw purchasing. The straw purchasing is when a person that legally can buy a gun does so at a gun show, but they're not purchasing the firearm for themselves, but they're purchasing it for a third person, usually a person that is prohibited by law to acquire a firearm, that third person. So they go to a gun shop and purchase many firearms for that person who is sometimes a trafficker himself or herself, and then they just simply cross it into Mexico. So it's very easy. Studies have estimated that around 213,000 firearms are purchased in the United States and trafficked annually into Mexico. And that's a conservative estimate. There are others that suggest close to 500,000. But the conservative estimate, it's based on an academic study done by researchers from the University of San Diego. So roughly 200,000 firearms are purchased annually in the United States and crossed into Mexico every year. And these are not just low caliber weapons. They are usually AR-15, AK-47 rifles, and occasionally Barrett 15 rifles, which are high caliber, and they're able to take down, for example, helicopters, which has happened in Mexico. Military helicopter was shot by a Barrett 15, unfortunately.
Well, what I think is really interesting is you hear sort of the narrative about U.S. weapons ending up in Mexico and Central America. I think narrative that most people might be familiar with is that these are smuggled weapons and that maybe some of them are acquired illegally on a black market. But also many of the weapons that are being sold are legal sales.
So the U.S. does legally import firearms to Mexico, Central America. The U.S. is the main supplier of legal guns to these countries. And then you do see them that they are diverted from the legal purchasers in those countries to criminal networks. Now, the proportion of that varies by country. In places like Mexico, since the proximity and they share a large border, many of the firearms that are coming into Mexico are illegally sent from the United States. But in other Central American countries, the proportion of firearms that are legally sold and then diverted within the country is also a bit larger. But yes, those are two potential channels by which U.S. firearms reach these countries, is through the illegal channels. But then the legal channels that within those countries are later diverted.
Eugenio Weigand Vargas is a postdoctoral research fellow at the Institute for Firearm Injury Prevention at the University of Michigan and is the lead author of the study, Firearm-Related Threats Before Migrating to the USA from Latin America and the Caribbean. When we come back, the study's authors hope their research helps policymakers ask important questions about violence and immigration.
How do we reduce the flow of firearms from the U.S. to these countries so that people are not being threatened, they're not being robbed, they're not being scared to a point that they're deciding to leave their home countries?
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. guns from the U.S. have fueled violence in Central America and Mexico. Violence is the primary factor driving millions of Central and South American immigrants to flee their countries. Researchers at the University of Michigan's Institute for Firearm Injury Prevention and the University of Colorado Anschutz Medical Campus collaborated on a study to examine gun violence that Latin American asylum seekers experience in their home countries. The study was co-authored by Eugenio Weigand Vargas and Jason Goldstick at the University of Michigan and Laura Vargas at the University of Colorado. Researchers talked with over 300 immigrants from Central America, Mexico, and the Caribbean about their exposure to gun violence in their home countries. Lead author of the study, Eugenio Weigand Vargas, says the survey was restricted to a particular group of asylum seekers.
So this survey occurred in McAllen, Texas, again in a respite center from 2022 to 2023. To recruit the responders, they had to be older than 18 years of age. They had to speak either Spanish or English and had to come from Latin American country or Caribbean country. The survey included various questions around the respondents' background, demographics, whether they had suffered violence, what type of violence, whether they had been threatened with a firearm, what was the context of that threat, which was also important to us. It also included various questions that determined whether that person had signs of post-traumatic stress disorder or not, reasons why they had left their country, whether they were working in their home country. The way to do this, we selected the question of, have you been threatened with a firearm before? And that was important to us. And just a simple response show that approximately 48% of immigrants reported previous firearm-related threats before coming to the United States. And just to put this in a little bit of context, that proportion in the United States has been estimated to be 21%. So 21% of the people in the United States have been threatened with a firearm. This proportion is 48%. So 48% of immigrants report that they have previously been threatened with a firearm. Another thing that we did is we wanted to associate what increases the likelihood of a person to report firearm-related threats. And we found that country of origin, for example, did play a role. So people coming from El Salvador, Venezuela, and Honduras were more likely to report previous firearm-related threats than people coming from other countries. Another significant association that we found was that people that reported previous firearm-related threats were also more likely to report post-traumatic stress disorder, meaning that they had mental health issues coming into the country that were associated with that firearm-related threat. And another thing that we found is that the most common incident was related to extortions and robberies. So people that suffer firearm-related threats, the most common incidents involved robberies and extortions. Though you did see some intimate partner violence, you also saw violence perpetrated by, for example, police officers to keep quiet and not report a crime. So you saw various incidents involving firearm-related threats. But again, the most common were robberies and extortions.
Were you able to collect any individual anecdotes from anybody in this study other than just the data you collected?
The surveys were conducted by my colleague, Laura Vargas. She did mention some anecdotes. That was not part of the process that went into our study, but she did collect some personal stories, which were really interesting. So, for example, one that she did mention to me was that a person that was shot multiple times in two different incidents and had survived. That was the one that caught my attention because he was shot at least five times and had survived, luckily. So that's one that anecdote that really surprised me. But again, collecting anecdotes was not part of this study.
So when you are collecting all this information and you are releasing this study, who is the audience that you would like to connect with for this? Would you like this to be seen by immigrant advocates? Would you like to be seen by lawmakers? What are you hoping that this study will result in as far as maybe policymaking?
That's a good question, and I think a little bit of both. We do want advocates to see this, because it's a pretty high number. You're talking about almost 0.5% of the immigrant population report previous firearm-related threats. But this, obviously, I want policymakers to see this and potentially have some responses to it. So we found that they're more likely to show post-traumatic stress disorder. So what are some of the services that can be provided to these people at the border? I mean, they're fleeing violence, and they even mentioned that the number one reason that they're leaving their home countries is violence. So how are we attending to those people that are coming scared with post-traumatic stress disorder? How can we attend them at the border? That's kind of policy actions at the border. But at the same time, I also want to highlight that, you know, the flow of U.S. firearms to these countries has an impact beyond organized crime, but has an impact on extortions, has an impact on public health, and has an impact on migration. Migration is often seen as a problem in the United States. And one way to address this is, how do we reduce the flow of firearms from the U.S. to these countries so that people are not being threatened, they're not being robbed, they're not being scared to a point that they're deciding to leave their home countries? That's another thing that I also wanted to highlight. And we actually wrote it on the article, is when discussions about firearms trafficking internationally are at the policy table, this is an important point. These firearms, they are affecting people that are then deciding to flee their countries and coming to the United States. That's a key point that we wanted to highlight in the study.
Do you think that government officials have so far been able to address firearms trafficking and sales in these countries? Because usually when you hear about politicians wanting to get to the center of why so many people want to seek asylum in the U.S., you know, they may focus on climate change, or they will probably focus on violence more than anything, or they'll focus on economics, but they don't necessarily take any action against the flow of firearms, which is sort of the launching point to the violence that is causing people to flee.
Yeah. And again, that was one of the points that we wanted to highlight, make that connection. You know, firearms are linked to migration. They're also linked to drug trafficking, which is another issue in the United States. So issues that are important in the United States, migration and the fentanyl, they are linked to firearms trafficking from the U.S. to these countries. And that's something that we really wanted to highlight in this study, so we can get some type of response into, like, hey, you know, if we want to address migration, one of the potential channels we could have a real effect is, let's reduce the flow of firearms, particularly assault weapons, which are the weapons of choice for criminal groups in Mexico and Central America to extort, to commit robberies, and to commit massacres, quite frankly. A policy that I think might be good to explore is the regulation, not the ban, but the regulation of assault weapons in a way that, you know, AR-15s and AK-47s are not sold by the thousands and trafficked to Mexico very easy. Overall, I think when discussing federal policies to address gun violence within the United States, it's also important to include the implications internationally. So, for example, if researchers found limited evidence of the removal of the assault weapons ban on violence in the United States, they should also consider the potential implications beyond the United States, which often they don't. That, again, is another goal that we wanted to do with the study, is highlighting that international impact and kind of inviting policymakers to consider the implications of both federal and quite frankly, also state policies on the international stage or in other countries.
Well, I want to sort of maybe change topics a little bit. The U.S. isn't, or at least the U.S. government doesn't necessarily track gun violence or gun violence deaths. It's usually up to other organizations. And you are at the Institute for Firearm Injury Prevention at the University of Michigan. Could you tell us a little bit about that group, and if it has anything to do with sort of filling in the gaps that is currently exposed in government surveillance of gun violence?
Yeah, it's good that you mentioned. When I was talking about researchers considering the impact beyond, I was precisely talking about research institutions, NGOs, and other organizations. So the University of Michigan, the Institute for Fire and Injury Prevention, we do a lot of work on various prevention studies. And, you know, we do a lot of preventing efforts on intimate partner violence. We do a lot of prevention on suicides, on youth firearm violence within the United States. Let's not forget that the United States has a gun violence problem within its territory. You know, we do a lot of analysis about disparities between, for example, Hispanics and white non-Hispanics in terms of rate of firearm homicides. Where are these disparities occurring? Whether they are at state level, are they occurring across all demographics or only certain demographics? So the Institute does various work around firearm-related prevention efforts that focus on suicides, focus on non-fatal shootings, mass shootings, police violence, disparities. So there is a limitation on data, but, you know, the Institute does collect a lot of survey information. For example, they have large amount of surveys that provide valuable information about gun ownership in the United States, about gun-related victimization in the United States. But there's still a lot to do when it comes to international efforts. There has been some surveys that have been conducted in Mexico around gun ownership, but that's still very limited. Usually when we're talking about analyzing firearm-related mortality or deaths in other countries, we use vital statistics from each country. So Mexico, for example, has a pretty good system. INEGI collects data on mortality, and you can even break it down by firearm mortality, so whether it's a firearm homicide, firearm suicide, etc. There's definitely data that we would like to have that it's non-existent, not available, and we have to use different methods and tools to acquire that data, whether it's survey or like the study we did or other.
Well, I know a lot of work goes into the research that you do. And have you seen signs that maybe it is making a difference or being cited by lawmakers, either locally, nationally, or internationally?
There's definitely some international recognition on this issue now. I know that groups in Mexico and groups in the United States are talking to each other, you know, have highlighted this issue. That's a good thing, and it's very beneficial. I know that the Mexican government, for example, is also interested on this issue. There is even a lawsuit pending where the Mexican government sued gun manufacturers in the United States for malpractice. So I know there's an interest on this issue, and it has been highlighted at least at a regional stage.
This program's going to air the weekend before President-elect Trump is inaugurated. Do you expect to see more immigrants who are seeking asylum saying that they are victims of gun violence? I don't know if you've had a chance to look at what the future might foretell.
So in terms of federal changes, and I'm not very optimistic that things are going to change around firearm-related legislation. Things might occur at a state level, but I'm not very optimistic, at least in the U.S., of any federal legislation change. I do think that the Mexican government is going to have an interest on the issue. I imagine that the Mexican government is going to be maybe more vocal on the issue. I don't foresee federal legislation changing in the United States, however. That doesn't mean that the topic is going to go away. I do envision advocates and organizations and academics addressing this issue, which, like you mentioned, has already been brought. Has already raised awareness, and I think it's going to continue to be an issue that is going to be of interest, again, to the research community, to the NGOs, to gun violence prevention organizations. But having said that, I'm not very optimistic about the federal legislation. So there has been attempts. There has been at least two bills that have been introduced. It's the Stop Cartels Act and the Stop Arming Cartels Act. Unfortunately, because I think the bill was a good step. So what I mean to say is that there have been attempts to address this issue by Congress. At least a couple of Congress and senators have recognized this issue. I just don't know if there's going to be more or not introductions on this topic. It's just hard for me to say. There is definitely a problem
of U.S. firearms flowing beyond its borders to Latin American countries and Caribbean countries. It has been having a devastating effect in violence that goes beyond drug markets. They are using extortions. Those weapons are used in robberies. And even our research has shown that even intimate partner violence incidents have grown related to firearms, and that people are fleeing violence to the United States, violence that is fueled by U.S. firearms. And those people that are fleeing violence have post-traumatic stress disorders when they're coming to the United States. And responses need to be included or at least discussed. The problem of U.S. firearms being trafficked to other countries needs to be included in discussions, whether they are federal policies, state-level policies, or immigration policies. That's something that needs to be included and discussed.
Eugenio Weigand Vargas is lead author of the study Firearm-Related Threats Before Migrating to the USA from Latin America and the Caribbean. The study was a collaboration between the University of Michigan's Institute for Firearm Injury Prevention and the University of Colorado Anschutz Medical Campus. The study's co-authors are Jason Goldstick of the University of Michigan and Laura Vargas of the University of Colorado. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.